Welcome everybody, and welcome to this teleclass called Crafting Your Terms and Conditions. I'm Angela Anoff, and this call is part of the Professional Organiser's Edge. It's one of our monthly teleclasses, and it will be available for Edge members afterwards in the member area on the website. So it won't matter when those members get around to listening, because they have access to this one and all the other previous teleclasses. But for everybody else, this will be emailed as well. This recording will be emailed to you, and I hope you do get to listen to it soon. What I want you to do when you listen to it now is to write down the code words that I'll be telling you. Those code words you use to get a certificate on completion of, you know, of all the, when I get all those code words, I will send you a certificate that you can then use for APO accreditation. And I really believe in professional development, so much so that at the moment recently I just joined the professional development subcommittee for APO, so that should keep me busy for a bit. Anyway, back to the topic tonight, crafting your terms and conditions. This is something that a lot of people, especially when they're just starting out as organisers, want to know about. And often in the APO groups, we'll get the request, you know, hey, does anybody want to share a template for terms and conditions? And to be honest, I don't think there is such a thing that would cover everybody's needs. The reason being, we as organisers have such a variety of different businesses. Our business models are different. Our clients are different. They're certainly very different. And so there's no real cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all approach. Now, of course, I'm sure on the internet that you can probably get terms and conditions and so on that you could tailor to suit yourself, and that's certainly a valid way of doing it. What I want to make sure is that tonight you don't misunderstand any of what I say as solid legal advice. It certainly isn't. I'm not qualified to give that kind of advice. And I want you to, if you're concerned about anything or if you have a question about anything to do with the legality of it, of your terms and conditions, get good advice about it. Find out for sure about what you're wanting to do with your clients and so on. And things do vary state to state. Things like privacy policies are global across Australia and more across the world. But there are things, like payment policies and how you take payments and so on, that vary from time to time as laws change. And so I want you to make sure you're responsible for your own legal advice. Okay, so let's get into it. Why do we have terms and conditions? Well, they build good relationship with your client. When everybody's on the same page and everything's understood, there are no misunderstandings about, oh, I thought I could pay you next week when my pay came in, or, I thought I was only going to, pay when the whole house had been decluttered and not every single of the, 13 weeks that it takes, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no misunderstandings when you have good policies that determine your terms and conditions, and these are communicated well. It shows your professionalism. It means you will get paid on time. It means you'll have a smoother run with your client. There won't be any missteps along the way. You will also be modelling good organisational skills to your clients by setting policies. When I work with clients, I'm sure they get sick of me saying, what's your policy going to be on that? how many scarves are you going to keep? What's the policy around that? So It's the same in business. What is your policy going to be on a certain thing? Sometimes terms and conditions evolve. They change over time as your business grows and your needs grow, etc. Or you've made a mistake with a client and you've learned from it, and so your terms and conditions will change. But the more that you can set in place ahead of time and think about what are the boundaries that you're prepared to live with, and therefore they will inform the policies that you set in place, and they will inform the terms and conditions that you communicate to your clients. So have a think about all of those things before you even start. Now, they certainly save time in business. If you have clear terms and conditions that the client doesn't have to wonder about, the client pays on time, doesn't cancel, etc., etc., it certainly saves you time and effort in your business. And when you have really good terms and conditions, they can be put into a template that you create yourself, something like an email signature, or a document that you fill in the blanks on, that certainly will save time. There will be less mistakes, and I said they will evolve. So that brings me to our first code word. The first code word is policy. What will be your policy? So write that down. There will be two more code words. And at the end of tonight's call, I'll tell you what to do with those three code words. All right. So what kind of terms and conditions are there? And you know, what are you going to set in place? And most people think of, well, the cost and how you'll get paid and maybe a cancellation policy. And they don't often think any further than that. And it's not until you start working with clients and seeing the things that can go wrong and the misunderstandings that can occur that it becomes obvious, oh, actually, you need a lot more policies and terms and conditions than this. So I'm going to run through the list of things that you would have in place for your working with your clients. And I will also mention afterwards some that you'll have, like personal policies that you don't necessarily have to communicate to clients. You know, there's a difference between the kind of policy that you would put in writing and put before a client and the kind of policy that you would keep to yourself and just keep in mind when you're booking a client, for instance. But it'll become clear what I mean later. So like I said before, there are all different clients. We as organisers work with all kinds. They could be, you know, corporate clients who would, seriously, they would have their own big long list of terms and conditions. And when you're working with corporate clients, more often than not, they'll tell you how they'll pay and on what time frame. So that's one consideration. Then there's home or small business operators. You know, they're going to be used to seeing terms and conditions in their own work and they won't be put off by it. Then there's the residential client that most organisers do work with. And if you can picture the difference, you know, let's say they're all women in their 30s. The woman in her 30s working in the corporate world has very different expectations to the one working in her home-based business, and has the one who is working at home in her kitchen with her family, or you know, going out to work, etc., but asks you to come and work with her at home, will have different expectations again. That if you try to put a set of terms and conditions and a contract in front of that woman who is a stay-at-home mum, it will likely put her off and think, oh, my God, oh, this is all too hard, etc. So just think about who are you working with? What are they used to in their everyday life? If they hired a plumber, if they hired a a cleaning service, if they hired a personal trainer, would they, you know, expect a long contract, or would there be another way for them to receive, you know, communication about terms and conditions? Another group to consider is the virtual client. Now, the virtual client, I want to say, you know, talk about separately, because you're not going to be in their home. You're not going to be collecting money in person, or you know, you just won't have that same relationship. It, by its very nature, it's a distant relationship. So you're going to have to consider what the terms and conditions for that unique relationship will be like. Okay, so I mentioned that most people think of the cost, you know, the agreed price, the payment terms and how they'll get paid, the method, and a cancellation policy. But what about other policies, like who's going to remove the rubbish from the house, or the donations from the house? Who's going to, you know, get rid of all that stuff? What are you going to provide as part of your service, and what are they going to provide? What other inclusions will the client expect? A really important area to consider is occupational health and safety, and there's a long list of dangers that we face as organisers. Another policy to consider for your T's and C's is a travel policy. You know, some organisers travel interstate, internationally, for their organising. So what will your policy be around that, even if it's just, you know, across town? And what about the services that your client can expect? So that's something that you can think about, and I'll go into more detail about those in a minute, but think about those. And then there are the kind of policies and terms and conditions that you would have, variable ones that change from client to client. Things like, how tough are you going to be with them? That's a little agreement between you and an individual client, a discussion to have in person, and it might even include some kind of a written contract, similar to what children or students write as a contract, you know, for, say, internet use at school and so on. But you can see that these sort of things come up. For some clients, that kind of thing is really important, and they want to know, what's your policy? And if you can communicate that to them clearly, they will have more confidence in you, and it will help you down the line when, you know, if they're proving resistant to your method, you may be able to say, well, hang on a minute, remember we said at the start, I did ask permission for, you know, to be pushing you hard and to give you some pushback when you resist and so on. So just have a think about that. Okay, so they're the client-focused policies and terms and conditions. What about the ones that you set in place for yourself and for your business? The personal policies that clients would never know about. Things like, for instance, I have a personal policy. I never work on my birthday. Of course, they don't need to know that. They don't need to know that when I'm looking at my diary and, you know, there's my birthday, they don't need to know that that's an available day. You're in charge of your diary. They don't need to know that I only work, do weekend work if it's for actually training organisers. I just don't work on the weekends. They don't need to know that I do sometimes work on the weekends. Another one that you might want to put in place is about who you're willing to work with. I only work with people I like. I'm too old these days to work with people that I don't like anymore, you know. And I know somebody who openly says it. It's part of her marketing. I only work with nice people. So, of course, nice people are drawn to her. Have a think about it. Another policy of mine is three strikes and you're out. You know, I guess it's a difficult client policy. If a client messes me around or is in some way disruptive, three strikes and you're out. It might actually be one, but, you know, if you have a policy set in place ahead of time, you know how to react when you're faced with that sort of dilemma. So I mentioned before availability, about me not working on my birthday or on a weekend, but what does your ideal week look like? If, for instance, you prefer working in the mornings, hands-on with your clients, go ahead and say, I only work in the mornings. And it has to be a pretty special client to change that policy. Okay, and here, what about photos, before and after photos? I think it's pretty well known that I am not a fan of the before and after photo, and I have my strong policies around that. But if you are going to use photos in your business, and that's a decision you've made for you and your business, what are the policies and terms around that? And if you then, you know, you could communicate that to your client. And, of course, if you're going to use the client's photos or, you know, any kind of a case study about the client, make sure you have permission. And that would be a really good time to have a written contract, a written statement, you know, from you to the client, agreeing how you will and won't use that stuff. I'll just get on my hobby horse for a moment and remind everybody that once something's on the internet, you don't have control over it. Even if it's on your website, other people can click share, you know, it's gone. So, okay, I'll get off the hobby horse now and just say that if you have a photo use policy and it's clearly communicated to your client and they agree in writing, etc., then, you know, that's a really good condition that you would need to communicate. Okay, so who will you help? Your other personal policy about how far are you willing to go for people? Will you work with people who hoard? Will you work with people who are not consenting? You know, we've all had that call from a frustrated relative saying, you know, please come and help my husband, please come and help my mother. You know, they just need to get organised. Or even worse, please come on Thursday while my mother's out. You know, are you going to do that? And before you say yes, I would remind you about the code of ethics, APO code of ethics, and hope that you would not do it. But, you know, there are times when you might even be duped into doing it. You know, but somebody may even misrepresent themselves and say that they have permission to do this work. And I really think it's a great idea for all of us organisers to have some kind of a clause in our terms and conditions about that, about what are we going to, you know, who are we working with and do we have permission to touch their stuff. Now, back to hoarding. If you're going to work with someone who hoards, what level on the ICD clutter hoarding scale will you work to? And, you know, all the other things around that, what kind of personal protective equipment will you use, etc. Will you work with children? or the elderly. There's all kinds of things for you to consider and to be prepared for, because we get thrown into all kinds of situations. Okay, now that brings me to the second code word, which is communication. Good communication is the key. So I am going to pause here and ask if there are any questions.
I can't think of anything at the moment. Last week at the Brisbane Forum meeting, Bonnie Black also went through the terms and conditions.
Okay, great.
So it's quite, but some of the things you're bringing up are quite different from how she is. So it's really good to hear two perspectives about it.
Yeah, well, that's why it's great. Yeah, that's why I'm saying this isn't from my experience. And it's certainly not legal advice. And everybody's business model and, obviously terms and conditions are going to be different. And I want to trigger some thoughts for you about what to consider and what to include in your terms and conditions.
One of the things that did come up in the meeting was about the photos and the need to be really careful, because apparently when you take the photos on your phone, depending how you've got your settings, people can then find out where it was taken.
Oh, great point. Yeah.
So that was really like, wow, that's huge.
Yeah. Well, exactly. The technology around it is phenomenal.
Yeah, I've thought of having before and after photos for the website, but I'm really going off the idea now. It all seems a little bit too hard, really. And I don't really want to get involved in that.
Yeah, fair enough. And if anybody wants to have a discussion with me about, the before and after photos and whether it's a good idea or not, obviously I have a pretty strong opinion on it and I'm happy to share it. But I see a lot of organisers do it quite respectfully and all of that. It's something for everybody to consider for themselves, but there are dangers attached to it, so just beware. Okay. All right, moving ahead. I will go into some depth about some of these terms and conditions that you could consider and some of the things to think about when you're setting your policies in place. So let's look at cost. Is it going to be the same for everybody? Is it going to be the same for the client down the street that's in a residential situation as for the virtual client? Is the cost going to be the same for every day and every time of the day? So if you're an organiser that's willing to go out of an evening that works with people after hours or on the weekend, are you going to charge the same for that service as you do for the daytime service? And if you are going to vary your costs, think about how you're going to communicate that, the wording, or whether even you will include that or not. Then your payment terms, and again, this is the big one that most people consider when they're thinking terms and conditions. It's the, when do you get paid? Do you get paid at the end of the day that you work with somebody? Are you getting paid in full before you even get there? Most people these days are taking a deposit for the work that you do. What are your returns policy going to be around that as well, so that if someone has prepaid and something actually happens that they have to cancel or they choose to cancel, what are the refund terms going to be? That's, something you've got to consider ahead of time. What are the consequences of non-payment? And they may be, if your policy is you require a full prepayment and it hasn't arrived at least 24 hours before you're due to work with that person, what are the consequences going to be? Is it, you know, bad luck cancellation or, you know, what? And tied to that, the cancellation policy, of course. What are the consequences if somebody cancels in less than 48 hours? That 48 hours is my personal cancellation policy. If somebody cancels in a shorter time frame, then they're charged at the full rate. Now, just today I had a situation occur. I've been working with a client very regularly, every Wednesday, for a couple of months, and I got a phone call from them today and they need to cancel tomorrow. Well, clearly that's less than 48 hours notice, but, you know, this is where I personally decided that their reason was good enough and I knew they're genuine. They haven't shown any sign before of messing me around, of being disingenuous and all that sort of stuff. So I let it slide. But, you know, they know that my policy is otherwise, and so they were very grateful. There's another policy of mine. You know, I'm not going to be too hard about it unless I absolutely have to be. So, you know, what's your policy going to be about it? Now, what if you're the one cancelling? What is the policy going to be then? You know, maybe you're sick, maybe your child's sick and you can't leave them, you know, they've got to stay home from school and you can't leave them home alone. What's the policy going to be then? And I would suggest, whatever it is, you want to make sure the client feels good about it, you know. Obviously, if it happens often, maybe you have to think outside the square on that too. Now, I know one organiser who doesn't have many terms and conditions, but when clients do mess her around is when she brings out the special policies just for them. Things like, you know, maybe you require prepayment before a date even goes in the diary. So if one client is a chronic non-payer and, you know, they've messed you around lots of times before, maybe a condition of working with them is that you're only going to even look in your diary to put their name in once they've sent the money to you. I have another client who I'm now working with every Tuesday. And that came about because this particular client, her motivation and her energy comes in fits and starts. And that was impacting me and my business in that she was quite demanding some weeks and wanting every spare minute I could give her. And then the following week, you know, she will have booked every spare minute and then all of a sudden, no, I can't do it, I'm too tired, I'm sick or whatever. And she was cancelling. So we have now agreed that Tuesday is her day and I don't give her any extra time, even though she's desperate. And I've told her, no, you know, this is a good chance, this will save you money because you can work on the homework in between time and you will be able to remember the appointment much more easily because it's at a regular time every single week. And that's the policy that she and I have agreed to. And she knows the next step is then if she starts messing me around with that she just won't get service at all. So, you know, it really helps to refine your terms and conditions when people you know, help you learn that way. That's good. All right, I mentioned removing the rubbish, and this is always a hot topic whenever you get organisers together. Some organisers will gladly do it. It's part of their service. It's an added benefit to the client that they will remove all the rubbish and the donations and all of that. I personally don't, but I can see argument for both sides. Now, I'll tell you why I don't. I never want to be in the position of being accused of losing something, you know, deliberately taking something, etc., etc. I never want to be in that spot where someone says, I can't find Grandma's ring and you must have taken it, whether it was an accident or on purpose. That's the main reason I do it. The other reason for me is the clients I work with, we're getting rid of a lot of stuff, a lot. Like the one I work with today, we literally had at least 5 huge bags of rubbish and also, oh, I would say, 3 big heavy bags of donations. And that was just, you know, that's average for us. Now, I've got a little car. I couldn't possibly fit all that stuff into my car. And then where am I going to put it? You know, it's tip fees, etc. So, you know, with some clients, you've got to steer them in a different direction. And I have a really good service that comes and collects donations. I also use 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And I find that with the particular clients that I work with, it helps to reinforce their independence, their taking responsibility for their own stuff and so on. However, I know that, you know, Wendy Haynes, when she works with people who hoard, she gets it out of their sight once and for all straight away. She just arranges for that to happen. And it's not ever going to be enough that the person, you know, puts it in the rubbish themselves, because the clients she works with, that just wouldn't work for. So obviously, it's horses for courses. You've got to think about it. Now, if you decide that you are going to remove the rubbish yourself and be responsible for that, make sure it is a very transparent process. It's, you know, a very open thing, that you run things by them, that you have the maybe an agreed plan in place that they've signed, that you are allowed to take away with you, you know, this particular thing, and then they agree to it. Because you never want to be in a position of being accused. It's very unpleasant. All right, so what are the other expectations that clients can have aside from rubbish removal? What are you going to provide? Now, I have heard about organisers who provide lunch on, you know, at the end of the project as a little celebration. You know, that's something out of the box. You might be providing things like hanging files and crystal tabs and the little, you know, maybe it's labelling that you'll provide without extra cost to the client. And maybe it's something more expensive. I sometimes, if I can see that a client needs an inexpensive little, you know, organising tool in their home, I'll give it to them. I include it in the price because I don't want to be nickel and diming them. You know, I don't want to be quibbling over small amounts and adding $5.55 to the invoice, you know, for that kind of thing. I make sure that my price is going to encompass that, and I never want to feel resentment about anything that I'm giving. And the client thinks it's fantastic. It's a little bonus. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to expect that they provide? And this is something you could, you know, discuss with them ahead of time and then follow up with in an email. Not every single policy is going to be global for people. So perhaps one thing you would expect for them to provide is permission from the other householders, or it might be a clear space for you to work. You know, if you're going into a house that's pretty cluttered, maybe you expect that they will have the bed clear so that you can use that as a sorting area. Maybe you expect them to provide a clean sheet to put over the bed rather than you having to bring one, so that dust and stuff doesn't get all over the place. Have a think about all those little things that you expect from a client and that a client might expect from you. That brings me to something that we should all expect, and I suspect that some organisers, because we are such giving people who like to help, we take our own health and safety sometimes not seriously enough, and there are things, hazards that we encounter that we should be taking seriously, not just on our behalf, but on the client's behalf as well. So, for instance, you know, it's just so typical for somebody that I work with to, you know, climb up on a rickety stool to get something heavy down from the top of a cupboard. You know, that's just a typical scenario. And I can tell you that does not happen on my watch. If, you know, that's why I've got a stepladder in my car, and it's a good, strong, sturdy one. And if we can't reach it using that or some other similar thing that they've got on site, I'm sorry, we're not touching it. That's just how it is. And if maybe we'll have to work on that next time after they've thought of a solution to get that heavy box down. So heights, you know, the type of equipment that people expect you to use, that's something to consider with your OC health and safety. Another thing is extreme weather. You know, it can get pretty hot in the summertime, and if you make a personal policy that you won't work in someone's uninsulated hot garage, you know, a tin shed or whatever, in the middle of summer, that's fine. You've got to communicate that to your clients. What about pests? Are you going to work in a place that's got rats and mice or cockroaches or... you know, all those sorts of pests? Are you going to work in a place that has mold? Now, a lot, you know, I'm not talking mold, little corner in the shower. I'm talking full-on infestation where the entire wall is covered in mold, or even the things that you're handling. These are really serious hazards that we need to be careful about, and you've got to be you know, considerate of your own health. And when you start disturbing things, mold spores become airborne, and the air quality is something else. Now, if you're asthmatic and mold spores are flying around, that's life-threatening. What if it's not mold spores but just dust? You know, that's also a hazard. It might be that nobody's opened a window in the place forever and ever, and you need to insist that the air is, you know, is allowed to circulate freely while you're working. You're entitled to, you know, it's your workplace. You're entitled to have these considerations. What about pets and pets on the loose, you know, dogs? If you're concerned about dogs, if you're allergic to cats, if you don't like the fact that they've got a snake in a tank, you know, all of those things, and the pet hair, the pet droppings, those sorts of things get into the mix, have a policy around that as well. And what about children? Are you willing to work with a child around? And, of course, there are lots and lots of children who don't get in the way and all that sort of thing. But what if there's a child that is distracting, or, you know, it is a problem? Have some policies that can back up your decision-making on the spot about that. And then finally, one that I struggle with sometimes is smoking. I, you know, it's... it's one of those things. Sometimes you don't know until you get to someone's home, they're a smoker and they smoke inside. And are you willing to work in there in that environment? You know, that's something you've got to decide. And if you're not willing to work in that environment, is that something you're going to talk about during the very first conversation that you have with your client? It's up to you. Okay, finally, we've got the travel policy. I've spoken to lots of organisers when I've been training and mentoring and so on, especially people who live in Sydney. This is, you know, Sydney's not an easy city to get around, and it's huge. So are you going to have a distance that you're going to travel to for free? Is there going to be an additional charge for any further and so on? Are you willing to travel and stay overnight? If you're travelling overnight, what do you expect an overnight allowance? What sort of accommodation standards do you expect to have covered in your fees, etc.? All those sorts of things. Will there be an extra charge per hour? Are you going to charge for the time that you're travelling, or will there just be a flat fee for charging for travelling that extra time? All these really interesting considerations for you. Any questions?
I thought of something earlier and I can't remember it now.
Oh, no. Well, that's okay. If you think of it later on, please, you can either email me direct.
I know what it is.
Oh, good.
The 1-800 got jumped.
Yes.
How much rubbish do you have to have for it to be worthwhile for them to come? Like,
well, they charge by the by how much they collect. So they'll come for as little as 1/8 of a truck, I think. You know, double check.
So how much would that be in garbage bag? Like big garbage bag.
That's a good question. I saw a truck just last week at National Organising Week, and I should have the answer. It might be, you know, 10 bags or something. I don't know.
All right. I think it says on their website.
Yeah, go to the website. They have a pretty user-friendly website.
I mean, I can
website.
Ring them too.
Yeah. And what now, they when they come, they will assess everything and they'll give you a quote. And just because they've turned up doesn't mean you have to accept their quote. So they would come, you know, say, yes, we think it'll be about this much, and then get permission to start transferring it to the truck.
So you're not committed to it by having them come?
No.
Another thing is too, one of the policies, it like really has to be about how heavy the things are that you sort of lift and stuff.
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Good point.
Because that's a really important one
when
you're a female, really.
Yes. And if you've got a bad back, you know, like these are the things you, in control of your business, you get to say. And it might be that you don't do any lifting. You might have a business where you only advise people and they do the work. You know, it doesn't have to be back-breaking. You know, and just because some organisers will crawl under a dusty desk to play around with electrical wires and things doesn't mean anything.
No, I probably wouldn't do that because I wouldn't know what to do. I don't know enough about it.
Well, that brings me to the next policy is what are your services going to be? So what, you know, are you going to be the organiser who provides a full service garage sale kind of experience for clients or an eBay service or computer help, and I certainly don't qualify for that one, but, you know, what are you willing to do? What services are you willing to carry out for your client? And sometimes because of the makeover shows that people see on TV, they can have an expectation that when you're done, it will look beautiful like an interior designer's been and painted throughout, etc. So you've got to make sure they understand. Are you or are you not one of those organisers? Okay, so how will you communicate your terms and conditions? are you going to have an agreement that people sign or not? There are alternatives, and like I said, it really depends on what your client is like, who your client is, what sort of work you're doing with your client. It certainly doesn't hurt to have something like a privacy policy in writing for them to feel secure about you coming into their home. So alternatives to the signed agreement are an email exchange can be a form of agreement. So it is admissible in court, I've been told by a lawyer, and please double check if you want to go down that path. I have to say that. But, you know, an email exchange, like I always send a booking confirmation when someone makes a booking, and it goes into the cancellation policy and the terms of payment and so on. So think about how are you going to communicate your terms and conditions. Now, a really good way to set the tone for your terms and conditions, which can vary from the very, very formal legalese at one end of the scale to the very casual, you know, no-nonsense type of language and a conversational tone, you put them on the web. I have a lot of my policies mentioned in my frequently asked questions. And I did some research today and had a look at some other organisers' websites, and they've done a similar thing. So if you set up the tone with your client right from the start, if they've checked your website, they may have seen those terms and conditions beforehand. And if they haven't, it's easy to put a link to that page in your booking confirmation email. Certainly you want to verbally mention your terms and conditions, things like whether you work with someone who smokes or not, and even things like when you expect the payment, when you are available. Obviously, you're going to have to verbally tell them. And then even with clients you've worked with for a long time, it doesn't hurt to remind them every now and again. And you could send it out every 3 months or so, a reminder, hey, just wanted to remind everybody about, all my current clients, these are my new updated policies and terms and conditions and so on. But make sure that however you communicate it, that you're both on the same page and there will be far fewer missteps, a far greater happy experience for both you and the client, and you never want those missteps and misunderstandings to sort of come between you in that very personal and trusting sort of environment at where you're in someone's home organising and decluttering. That brings me to the third code word, which is advice. Please seek your own advice. and finally, any more questions before we close off?
Can I just ask, I've found that clients so far, actually not a single client has asked for terms and conditions.
Oh, yes.
They don't seem to be interested.
No.
They just book you in. They don't ask a lot of questions. In my cases, it happened like what you just mentioned, that I mentioned things like, verbally in the first appointment or something, but they don't seem to be interested.
Mm.
But you still obviously should have them.
Well, you should have them for yourself, first of all. But also, they're not. It's only terms and conditions are only useful when things go wrong.
Yes.
It's to protect you from things going wrong,
yeah.
From the client who thinks it might be okay to pay you at the end of the week when a pay comes in, or I'll pay you after I've sold the things that we've put aside for sale. You know, those kinds of things. You never want that kind of thing to come between you.
Mm.
So, you know, even very... look, my email, the booking confirmation email that I send is quite relaxed sort of language.
Mm.
But it does tell them what I expect. And it's not I think it's like three paragraphs. It's not long, long, long.
So would it hold up legally?
Probably not. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, in setting all your terms, how much of a risk are you willing to take?
Okay.
You know, I heard of an organiser recently. I don't know who it was, sir, and I, you know, don't know if they'll be listening, so... But they had agreed to payment at the end of the project. Now, this could have been a three-bedroom house filled to the ceiling with clutter. I don't know. But, you know, that's a lot of risk to carry.
Yes.
So I would suggest whatever your payment terms are, that it's not that, you know.
Mm.
I mean, I wouldn't even say, you know, 7 days. I'd say 7 days is too long. That's my personal opinion. But again, it depends on who the client is, what kind of service you're giving them, etc.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I know, with, as you know, Angela, I do bookkeeping at the moment, and I've been doing that for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never actually had one client had written terms and conditions. That's because their accountant wanted it, and I've never had any problems, but I do have terms and conditions, but they're not actually written down usually. And if people step outside those terms and conditions, it depends on the relationship and, you know, mainly about payment. Sometimes, like I've got one lady who just sort of misses the emails, and she honestly does about payment.
Mm.
I believe she honestly does, but I always get paid.
Yeah.
So it comes down to those sorts of things too, but you just sort of get a gut feel a lot of the time too, about what's going on.
Mm. As far as people not paying, I think I've had three over my career, and, you know, it was always for small amounts because I would never let it go further.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah, you just don't allow them to get too big.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Angela, if you do come across a client that has pests or mold or what have you that
mm-hmm.
you can't, that you don't want to work in, and you only discover that when you actually arrive there, because you don't ask that all the, you know, on the phone, you don't have a list like, you know.
No.
Do you have pests?
No.
You know. So, What do you do? Do you honestly say when you feel uncomfortable with that, look, that I can't work in that environment, or what do you do?
You would have to say something like, you know, give them an alternative. I would. I'd say, you know, this is not safe for either of us to be working in, and it needs to, you know, there are things you can do to protect yourself and, you know, the mask and all the gear and so on. But also, if it's in an isolated area, you could insist that they get that treated, or, you know, you'll come back after they've had it treated.
Okay.
So, you know, I happen to know some really good mould remedial people. So, you know, it can be really expensive, though, and, you know, that's...
What do you do if they're not troubled at all? I recently had a client, we did her linen press.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time she's taken stuff out at the back, it was there were mice droppings.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, she didn't seem to be bothered by that. It's like, okay, what do you do with that? You know, it's not enough to, you know, run away and say that's not safe. But
no. Well, I guess she's the one that has to live with it.
Yeah.
You get to go away again.
I mean, I would see that as just I would clean that out, the mouse droppings, and just get on with it.
Yes, she did.
See any signs
she did clean it out, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then,
you know, what if you found a bunch of dead mice? You know, the, you know, there's a scale, isn't there?
Yeah, she couldn't see the point at all that this is not really hygienic or safe. I mean, I didn't say it like that.
No.
But, you know, yeah. Okay.
People have their own comfort levels and, yeah.
But I get what you say.
We see it all.
Yeah, that you should have those policies in place even if you don't really communicate them.
Yes.
But so that you are prepared and know what to do when it ever happens.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
But you can't cover every situation, can you? Because something new can happen when you go.
Exactly.
Like, it's impossible to cover everything.
Exactly. And that's how, you know, policies
that's
evolve.
How policies
Yeah,
that's right.
now I need to have a policy about that, you know.
About how fast I run when I see a mouse. See you later.
Yeah.
I'm not good with mice.
I'm not good with spiders, and yet if someone is paying me, I can be braver than I can be in my own home. So,
I could not be anywhere where there were mice.
There you go.
I can see something being there, that's fine.
Yep.
But see a mouse and I'd be out of there that fast.
There you go.
But I can't, I've just had this paranoia about mice.
That's your policy.
Yeah, my policy, I run for it.
Okay, look, thank you so much for joining in, you know, the discussion, and I hope this helps you to craft your own terms and conditions. Now, your three code words that you've written down, please send them to me at angela@creatingorder.com.au and just put terms and conditions teleclass in the subject line, and I will send you a certificate that you can use towards your APO accreditation. And if you've got a favourite tip or an unusual terms and conditions or some other kind of discussion, please keep it going at the Professional Organisers Edge Facebook group. We get some good stuff happening there. And I hope we do on this subject as well. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Angela.
Thank you, Angela.
See you next time.
See you. Bye.
Bye.